Well, are you starting to think about spring and what to plant in your garden this year? I know I am. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. With me today, Lisa Johnson. She is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. Always great to have her come by. And we'll talk about starting seeds. We'll talk about your garden. We can talk about maybe diseases. We can talk about pretty much anything that you'd like to talk about in the gardening area. We'll start with seeds. And we'll also talk a lot about Garden Expo as well, because Lisa and I will be on deck tomorrow morning along with Dr. Death, Brian Huddleston, to talk about all kinds of things at Expo. That's at 9:30 tomorrow morning. In the meantime, as you call, we have 10 pairs of tickets. So the first 10 people who call with a question will get your name, and Lexi Brout will get your name, and we will put it in will call for you, so you'll get two tickets. So call in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And, well, let's talk seeds for just a minute. You know, there's a funny, I was looking at the Wisconsin State Journal, have been the last week and a half or so, and the comic section, because there's a crankshaft comic, an old guy who's kind of grumpy, and he loves his garden. And so the last about 6 days or 7 days, he's been patiently awaiting the arrival of the beans and seed catalog. And so it's something funny every day. And finally, I think his daughter asked him finally, oh, how much is this? He told her that a drone was going to deliver the very first issue of that edition. And she said, well, how much are they charging for the drone? And he says, well, the drone's free, but I have to buy $2,000 worth of seeds. What do you think, Lisa? $2,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of seeds. He has a really big garden.
That's a heck of a lot of seeds. Well, you know, the seed displays are popping up all over the place, and the seed catalogs are showing up in the mail.
Raining down on us.
Sometimes it's almost overwhelming to figure out what seeds to buy.
Yeah, and they all look, you know, each one looks better than the next, and you make these huge, I usually make what I call my Cadillac list, and then I have my Chevy list, and then I have my Yugo list, which is the absolutely must-have, otherwise I'll die list.
So that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
But I also go back and I look at what I have already, because that's the danger. Like, you find that you actually have four packets of those 200 seeds of a particular type of lettuce. So,
oh, man. Well, then those old seeds can work.
Yeah. Some seeds work better than others. The viability really varies by species. Some are pretty well viable up to 5 years. Others, not so much. Onion seeds usually only last a season or so. But you can do a test that's called the seed roll test. If you're not sure that your seeds are viable, you take 10 seeds, you put them in a damp but not wet paper towel, and you stick that in a Ziploc bag. You don't close the Ziploc bag because you don't want it to rot. You want it to be warm and moist, and then you look on the seed packet to see how long it's supposed to take the seeds to germinate. And during the time while you're waiting for that period to pass, you make sure that the seeds don't dry out. And then after that period comes up, you know, maybe it's 7 days, maybe it's 10 days, you check and see how many of them germinated. And because you put in 10, you can estimate or extrapolate a percentage. Exactly. So if you get 6 seeds germinating, you know you're about 60% good to go. If it's, you know, 50% or less, you probably want to put a lot more, you know, seed a lot more thickly, or maybe get some new seeds.
How do you decide if a seed should be started indoors?
Well, usually it will say on the package. You can also estimate it from looking at the number of days that it takes to harvest. If you look at, for example, a tomato package, lots of times here in obviously in southern Wisconsin as opposed to northern Wisconsin, there's a lot of difference, and all around the U.S. there's a lot of difference in growing season days. You can often find on NOAA's website or sometimes your local extension website how many growing degree days there are. I know on our state, I believe it's the Master Gardener website, I think it has how many growing degrees at different areas of the state. And once you know that, then you kind of work back to, okay, when do I need to plant this seed? When's it supposed to germinate? How long is it supposed to take till harvest? But generally, seed packets that are sold in certain areas of the country will tell you if it needs to be started inside, or it'll say something like plant 6 to 8 weeks before the last frost date. So then you know definitely it's got to be started inside because it's going to be frosty outside.
I remember the first time I ever I tried tomatoes seeds, and I got some nice-looking seeds or some nice-looking plants, and then I stuck them outside, and I put them out there a day too early, I think. The next day when I looked out there, they were white and flat. You need
so
to sort of season them a little bit.
Yeah, that hardening off, some people call it the killing off process, but the hardening off process is supposed to toughen them up. It's giving them a little bit of tough love, but not too much so you don't end up killing them. But yeah, that acclimation to the outside, putting them outside for a little longer every day, you know, not putting them in direct sun or a really windy day, but putting them out maybe under a little shade for a few days. Usually they recommend a week or to 2 weeks. Usually a week is sufficient.
Enough.
Yeah.
You know what I do? I go and buy the plants now. When it comes to tomatoes, I'm always on the lookout for new kinds, and I just kind of stroll through the nursery and take a look. Oh, this one looks interesting. Let me try that one.
There are a ton of heirloom tomatoes these days, and there's a lot of new breeding going on, not only for disease resistance, but also for taste. I don't know if you've had Julie Dawson on from the UW. Julie's doing some really interesting research in the horticulture department where they are trialing a number of different vegetables, particularly tomatoes, but other vegetables too, that are being bred specifically for disease resistance and taste. And that's a tough act to do because Dr. Death has said many times that usually the gene for taste and the gene for disease resistance kind of don't go together, so that you either get a really healthy plant with tomatoes that tastes like cardboard, or you have a really great tasting tomato that gets diseased really quickly and it dies.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's hard to get the two together, but I think Rutgers is doing some research on that.
Lexi, we're gonna have to get Julie Dawson on the show. So write that down. We'll get her on, and
she's great.
Yeah, we'll do that. In the meantime, oh my goodness me, we have lots of people who
look at that.
Yeah, not quite the way it. Let's try Louie in Genesee and see what's up. Hi, Louie. Louie, are you there? Let's see. Let's put Louie.
And second,
I missed the first part, Louie. I'm sorry.
Nutritional difference.
Okay, we're going to have to rewind that question.
start over again with us.
Okay, what is the difference between a yam and a sweet potato?
Oh boy, you're going to ask me a tough question here right out of the gate, huh? They are, I believe, actually in different families. I remember I looked this up a while ago because I wasn't sure either. And I think that in general, sweet potatoes are planted using cuttings, and you can plant them at least here in southern Wisconsin. There's a cultivar called Beauregard that in general tends to be a shorter season. And yams, I believe, are actually in a different family. And I think those you need to plant from tubers, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. But I think that yams are not available here in Wisconsin.
To grow, yeah. I don't think we can grow them.
I don't think we have the ability to grow those. But we definitely can grow the sweet potatoes. You get them from cuttings, and you stick the cutting in the ground. And they're really not all that hard to grow. They don't have a whole lot of diseases. The biggest problem tends to be voles that get in and chew on the tubers.
Yeah, but they're great.
Yeah, oh, they're wonderful. we grew in our teaching garden, and my colleague Joe Mullenberg is involved in the Madison Sweet Potato Project, where we hook people up with sweet potato cuttings. But we grew one that was literally a foot long and about 8 inches tall. It was massive. I mean, it was football sized, and we grew it in a little raised bed.
Oh my goodness.
We couldn't figure out what we did right.
Well, there you go, Louis. Did you have another question?
Yes, I wanted to know if there was a nutritional difference between the two.
I don't think there's much.
I really couldn't tell you that. I have seen pictures of yams being grown in Africa where they're like baseball bat size. They're huge. So I think there is that technical botanical difference, but a lot of people here tend to confuse the two terms because yams are not really sweet potatoes and vice versa.
But you often see sweet potatoes, you know, yams and sweet potatoes are almost interchangeable comes to
that common name, but the plants technically are different.
So there you have it, Louis. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, what will we do here? Let's go to Robert and Wapan next. Robert, hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I tell you, I planted 2 rows of carrots last year, okay?
Yeah.
And I thought that I followed directions on the back of the package. My question is, what kind of population in a row do you really need? How far apart should the seeds be planted? Carrots need a lot of room?
Well, it depends on the variety. Some carrot varieties are pretty thick and others are pretty thin. So you may need like 2 inches between, or you may mm-hmm. need 3 inches, or you may only need an inch and a half, depending on the type of carrot that you're growing.
How do you? I guess I would look at the
packet.
The packet and see what it looks like. And if it's one of those big ones, then I'd go two inches.
Yeah, at least 2 inches.
At least 2 inches.
2 inches. Okay.
Yeah, for the big ones. And what you wind up doing, as you probably well know, Robert, is you can't do them. they're very hard to do, one at a time. And what you wind up doing is you thin.
Right.
Yep. Right.
Oh, you said?
Yeah, that's you seed them, you know, in a row, and when the seedlings start to come up, then you snip off a number of them so that you have the strongest ones left.
Oh, that's what you do, is snip off the grains?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the ones you're getting rid of.
Yeah.
When you're thinning. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the easy way.
And you pick out the stronger of the...
Yep. You let the stronger ones stay, and then you just eliminate some of the other ones in between. Usually when you get a packet of carrot seeds, they give you a ton of seeds, and they're so small that it's really hard to, you know, put them down one at a time like you would with a bean or something like that. So usually people will just seed them as best as they can, and then do some thinning later on. And I know it hurts to to snip off.
But that's my process.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what most people do.
Do you do the same thing with beets?
With beets, yeah. You can do the same thing with beets.
Any of those small seeds.
Yeah. Radishes.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Good luck.
Good luck. And let's go to Judy in Waupaca next. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I would like to know what plants and flowers would be beneficial for butterflies and bees and dragonflies and birds, plants that would be annuals, because when I get established in my Waupaca home, that has a full acre of sandy, sunny area, mm-hmm. then I'm going to plant some lupin and other wildflowers because I'm actually going to be in the area that has the endangered Karner blue butterfly.
Oh, wow. That's awesome that you're going to put out some food for that butterfly.
Oh, yes. That's my goal, my dream. That's what I'm going to do as soon as possible. In the meantime, what annuals could be beneficial for all those great creatures?
Okay. You've got sandy soil, you say?
In Wapaka, yes.
Yeah. That's going to be a little difficult. A lot of the annuals do need a fair amount of water. Couple that don't would be Cosmos.
Oh, yes, I like
and,
them.
Yeah, Cosmos is from Mexico, and it does grow in fairly poor soil.
Oh, yeah.
So I would recommend that. You don't want to get a real hybridized-looking one, you know, that has, like, a lot of petals. You want to get something where you can see the center and where it should be a fertile type that has nectaries that the bees can collect from.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so I know there are some Cosmos varieties that do have, you know, so many petals that they really don't have the structures that would allow for good pollination. But Cosmos would be a good one.
Any
yeah.
others?
I was thinking about, I was thinking dry, and I thought about moss roses, but I don't think moss roses are a real big attractor. You might want to try, marigolds are usually pretty foolproof,
yeah.
but you would need an heirloom variety because most of them, again, have too many petals and don't have the nectary structures for the bees.
I've noticed that my wild mint has attracted all of
yes,
that, the above.
Now, that's a perennial, though.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm
going
to transplant some.
Yes,
yeah.
Herbs in general. Yeah, yeah. Now, mint in general likes it wet, so that may help curtail it. But there are a ton of perennials that I can think of that would be good pollinators. But herbs in general are great. Cat mint,
yes.
catnip, and some of the things like the allium family, the chives, ornamental onions. Bees tend to like those as well. Obviously, if you can get some milkweed, that would be helpful. There are actually some annual milkweeds if you want. Those also can be helpful.
I'm going to try to make a visit to Prairie Nursery in Westfield, too.
Yeah, you'll get a lot of help there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep, definitely will. Well, good luck, and let us know how things go.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kathy. Judy in Wapaka up next. Let's see if we can get Judy on. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling. Judy,
I'm Judy
that was
in
just
Wapaka.
Yeah,
oh,
that
I'm
was
sorry.
We just did her.
Judy, I tell you what, I'm confused here, and I'll soon get myself straightened out. Thanks again. Let's go to, let's see. Now I've got to kind of let Judy go on my little screen here, and let's see if Mike's available. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Larry. Glad to be on the show. I got a question about dwarf alpine currants. They've been in the ground about 25 years, and recently we had to cut them way back to have some work done on the house. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to encourage them. They seem to be very weak coming back.
How far back did you cut them?
I think they were maybe 4 or 5 inches from the ground.
And how tall had they been?
They have been. We've been keeping them at roughly 2.5 to 3 feet, just under the windows.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little hard on a plant when you cut them back more than 50%. Now there are some plants like willows that take that kind of stuff and just keep on going. I'm not surprised that they're coming back a little weak. I wouldn't recommend putting a whole lot of fertilizer on them, but I would recommend keeping them well watered. What was the work done last year?
Actually, it was done like 2 years ago, and the last two summers.
Okay.
They've been sprouting up, but they're really, really struggling. They're not
yeah.
Putting out a lot of new growth. And
If it's been 2 years, then you could use some type of fertilizer. I wouldn't use anything that's really heavy in nitrogen, but maybe a 10-10-10 fertilizer just to see if you can. I would wait until, say, May, and then just give them one application, keep them well watered. It takes a while for a woody plant to recover when it's been cut back that severely.
One other thing about them, I noticed some years ago that they would kind of self-propagate if you took a long stem and bent it over and buried it.
Yep, they are suckering shrubs, so they will do that. And you can, that's called layering, what you were doing, and you can use that process if you wanted to, like, start some other cuttings. Of course, it's going to take a while for them to fill in, but you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I lost one or two in the process of that didn't come back at all. There must be about 15 of them, and one or two just couldn't take it.
Yeah. Well, you got it. Hopefully this year, with a little fertilizer, a 10-10-10, you're going to see some better results, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest today on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Next week on Garden Talk, we have an orchid expert with us to answer your questions, so I hope you'll join us for that. Right now, talking with Lisa Johnson, UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County, and visiting about all kinds of things in the garden, and we'll talk about Garden Expo as well. She and I will be on together. She's got other presentations on during the week, I believe, Lisa.
Yeah, I believe Saturday is growing. I think it's raspberries. It's either the raspberry or tomato talk tomorrow. One of them's on Saturday and one of them's on Sunday. I have to look at my notes again.
And Saturday morning at 9:30, you and I and Brian Huddleston will be together and we'll talk.
That'll be fun.
That'll be a lot of fun. I've got some fabulous books to give away as gifts, and we'll have some drawings for that. And we will sort of run a Garden Talk show. And we've got some slides, of some new varieties and some plant diseases. And you've even got a jumping worm slide, I think, so people can see that
as well. It's from my garden.
From your garden?
Yep, I'm afraid so.
Oh, man. Well, let's go back to the phones and Jennifer and Madison up next. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to try growing herbs this year from seed. I have a raised bed wooden planter. And what I'd like to know is there are so many different varieties of basil or of parsley. Is there some way to determine which one will be the strongest and most prolific in Madison? And how early should you plant them?
Well, basil, for example, is a it's not a hardy plant, so that does need to be started inside. It will tell you on the packet. Usually I do start those in early March in the Madison area or even late February, because basil takes a little more time than some others to germinate and really get going. Now, there are a lot of varieties that will do very well. There are some dwarf varieties. There's lemon basil. There's purple basil. So you're right. There are a ton of different basil varieties. Usually the fastest growing ones are the sweet basils. Those get pretty big fairly decently fast. But there is also a disease out there, basil downy mildew. And unfortunately, that's put a crimp in our basil raising abilities. So there are some resistant varieties that you might want to try if there's a big trouble with it in your area. Are you in a community garden or are you...
No.
At home?
I'm on the west side of Madison.
Okay, all right.
I just have this planter that's separate from the rest of the garden.
Yeah, well, basil is really easy to grow from seed. Chives are easy to start from seed, but they probably won't flower for you, but you should definitely be able to harvest some leaves. Marjoram's pretty easy to start.
Parsley?
Yeah, parsley is easy to start.
And you start, when would you start parsley, for example?
I'm trying to remember. I think parsley is one of those that germinates fairly quickly because we started some last year for our Master Gardener plant sale, which, by the way, if you're in the Madison area, is at the Extension office. It's the third weekend in May.
Yeah,
the third Sunday. So I believe that it's one that starts in like 7 days, and it gets big fairly quickly. It's like coriander, where coriander you have to keep planting because it goes to seed so quickly, changes from cilantro to coriander.
There you go, Jennifer. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Kathy in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry. This is Kathy and Lisa. I have black raspberries that have some rust on them, and I've been using copper, and I wonder if there's something more organic that I can use to control that rust.
Copper actually is considered organic. It is one of the things that organic growers can use. Something like a traditional fungicide would not be considered organic, but actually copper's not a bad thing if it's labeled for the rust. Does it list the raspberry rust on the label?
Yes, okay. It does. And
good.
It takes care of the problem. I just am not used to adding any chemicals to my garden, so
yeah.
I was worried. So I'm relieved. Thank you.
Right.
Yeah. I wish I was Brian right now, because I know that a lot of rust diseases need two hosts. So you might want to do some Googling and find out what the second host is. It might be raspberry, but it very well could be a different plant. And if it is a different plant that you happen to have in your garden, you might want to eliminate that plant.
Might be on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic website.
Yeah, I don't know whether raspberry rust is one of the fact sheets off the top of my head, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have one on there.
If you just type in UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, that'll pop up, and you can check there, too.
Or even PDDCUWEX will
we'll do it. There you go, Kathy. Thank you.
Thank you.
And on to Pete in Reedsburg. Hi, Pete.
Hey, thanks, Lori. My question concerns starting seeds with stratification, which I guess is just the fancy $5 term for exposing seeds to cold to get them to germinate.
Yeah.
The last couple of years, I've started seed here, and I've had some success and a lot of failures, and I'm at it again this spring. But it occurs to me that, you know, when you're talking about plants like any plant that would be suitable for zone 4 or zone 5, any perennial I'm talking about here, that in nature, all of them get stratified, right? So if I'm thinking about starting some echinacea, which prairie coneflower or liatris, for example, these are prairie plants that in nature always get stratified because that's mm-hmm. the kind of climate they're growing in. Would I up my odds of getting better germination if I use stratification, even if the seed packet doesn't indicate that, or am I just thinking about this too hard?
Well, I have grown echinacea from seed, and I've not had a problem with it germinating. I know that some seeds are pre-treated for cold, and they don't always tell you that on the label. And conversely, there are some things like pansy seeds that really need to be put in the refrigerator, and they don't always tell you that on the label either. So,
yeah.
I guess I would assume that most of them, what you might want to do, here's what you can do. Maybe do an experiment where you take about 50% of the seeds or even 25%, expose them to cold, and then do the others without that treatment.
Yeah, and see if it
makes any difference, because I am not confident that all of those seed packets are going to tell you whether they've been pre-treated or not.
All right. Well, maybe I do an experiment and I call you this time next year.
All right.
That sounds like a plan, Pete.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. We'll look forward to that call. And here's a call from Carl in Hayward. Carl, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
Hey, I've got a question that's going to follow what I'm going to preload it with. Last year, I planted some green peppers, some California Wonder peppers. I got two different seeds from two different companies or packages of seed. I planted them and started them in the house and got them going. And then middle of summer, they just turned terrible on me. I mean, they're spotted and everything else. So I sent in a photograph to, I think it's Brian. Is it?
Yep. Dr. Death.
Okay. I sent a thing to him, and he wrote back to me or emailed back to me after he looked at the pictures that I sent in. He said they had, I think, bacterium disease.
Yeah, bacterial spot, maybe.
Yeah, bacterial spot. That was it.
Yeah, we had a lot of problem with that on tomatoes, too, last year.
Okay, so my question is, is there any way to test the seeds prior to, you know, like you said, the germination? You put them in a cloth and you do that. Is there any way to test them before I put all that time and effort into, growing a plant, transplanting in a garden, and find out I have the same problem?
Okay. Yeah. What I've heard from Brian is that a lot of times the bacterial spot does come in on seeds. Now,
right.
Unfortunately, while you can't tell that by looking at them, mm-hmm. what you can do is hot water treat those seeds.
Oh.
There is a procedure, if you Google it, I don't remember what the exact temperature or time is, but it's something like 122 degrees, and you put the seeds in for a short amount of time.
Mm.
And that usually will kill off any bacterium that are on the surface. However, you got to, you know, it's a process where you gotta monitor it. You know, you don't want to boil your seeds to death either. So
yeah, well, I always start my peppers on Valentine's Day, so I have to have my seeds, and I have like a couple different companies, and I'll study that. But thank you, that's very good information you gave me.
Yeah, so do check that out. I think Brian might have it in the tomato. Well, that fact sheet hasn't come out yet, but he is getting one out on tomato bacterial spot. It might be up on the website already, and it might, if it does have that seed treatment, I think he's also doing another fact sheet soon on hot water treatments of seeds. So
there we go.
It should be coming out soon.
Website. What is that?
Oh, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic website, otherwise known as the PDDC. You can Google that and then UWEX for UW Extension, and it should come up.
Yep, there we go. Thanks a lot, Carl, for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go. Well, you know, Adam on Facebook has a tip for sowing seeds. We were talking about those little seeds. He takes the cheapest single-ply toilet paper he can get. He mixes up some flour paste and uses a pencil to dab the paste, picks seeds up, and then places them evenly spaced on the toilet paper. He folds it back over and seals it down with a little more flour paste.
Sure.
He calls it his own version of seed tape.
Yeah, the seed tape you can buy in usually any garden center, and it is a type of material that will decay in the soil, and it has the seeds all spaced out at the
proper width.
Yeah, the proper width that you're supposed to have for planting. So it can be easy if you're in a hurry, but is usually pretty expensive. But I like that thought. That's, you know, something that I do too with small seeds is I will usually take a pencil eraser and I'll dip it in water and kind of blot it off a little bit so it's damp, and then use that to pick up the mm-hmm. seeds and then transfer them into, or I use even like a popsicle stick, you know, something like that. You could probably use a Q-tip, just something a little bit moist that you can, you have to space the seeds out on like a plate or something. So
as opposed to me dipping my thumb and finger in the packet and then kind of spreading it along. And
yeah, it's a little more accurate.
It's a lot more accurate than me, than I am. Ken in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because for years now I've been growing geraniums from seed in my basement under fluorescent lights and a heat mat. And I get good germination, but the seedlings, a significant number of them turn red and die off. When I pull them out, they have very little root formation, and I lose quite a few that way. Do you have any thoughts on why that's happening?
It's, well, first of all, let me ask you where you get your seed-starting media.
From a distributor in Randolph, Wisconsin.
Okay, so it's a bagged product, right?
Say again?
Is it a product that's in a bag?
An envelope, yeah.
Envelope.
The seeds come in envelopes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I mean the media that you're planting the seeds into.
Oh, yes. That's a soilless, stale soilless mix that
okay.
I buy locally.
And is it especially for starting seeds, or is it like a potting soil?
No, it's for starting seeds. There's
okay.
No
okay.
dirt in it.
Well, that's what you need.
Okay, that's good. That's so then my next question is, are you reusing any of your pots or your little market packs or whatever you're planting into?
No, I buy fresh plastic cells every year.
Okay.
I reuse the trays, but I've cleaned the trays with a chlorine solution
okay.
from the previous year, but the cells themselves are brand new.
You might want to maybe switch out some of those trays. What I'm thinking, usually when we have germination where we don't have good root growth and you're seeing something like the leaves turning red, which would indicate to me that there's a nutritional problem because they're not getting what they need because their root system is compromised. It's probably like Pythium or Phytophthora or one of those seed diseases, which is why I asked you about the media and I asked you about the trays and the pots because I'm trying to figure out where that could be coming from. Are you? Is it always from the same company or do you use different companies for the seed packets?
I use different companies, but I haven't kept records good enough to know if the ones from a certain company are going bad on me.
Yeah. Usually something like that is caused by a fungal disease. Often, you mentioned you grow things in your basement, but you're using heat, so it shouldn't be that, you know, you're getting problems. Unless the media is too wet, then you can sometimes get root rot occurring.
Okay.
You're not letting them sit in water, right?
Definitely not. In
okay.
fact, I'm quite cautious. Geraniums seem to be pretty drought tolerant, so I tend to err on the side of too dry rather than too wet.
Yeah, that's a good trend to...
I'd still look at those trays.
Yeah.
I might try a new tray.
Yeah, because the fungus can really hide, Brian's told me, in plastic particularly.
Okay.
All right, give that a shot. And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Talking gardening today with our guest, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for visiting with us here on Garden Talk. And join in, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Lisa and I and Brian Huddleston will be Saturday morning at 9:30. We'll be talking all things gardening as well at Garden Expo at the Dane County Expo Center. It's always a wonderful, you know, I love going there just because, you know.
A little taste of spring.
Oh, it smells great.
Yeah.
There's all these different things that are going on there. It's warm and very inviting. And fun to talk to people, too.
Oh, yeah. There are people there that I look forward to seeing all year that I don't get to see otherwise. So it's a good time. A
lot of fun. Let's go to Lyric in Blanchardville. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I have a question. I had a flowering almond tree that I loved that died several years ago, and I'm wondering if I can plant a dwarf cherry tree, say, about 25 feet from it, or will there be a problem?
Oh, there shouldn't be a problem
no.
with that. Do you know what killed your almond tree, though? Was it fire blight? Or?
It got kind of pitchy sap coming out of
That's
it, kind of weepy.
Blight.
And then, okay.
And you took that all out, right?
Yes, so I did.
Okay. Fire blight is something that fruit trees can get, and I assumed that that was what killed the flowering almond because I've lost them from that, and I know it's fairly common. It is a bacterial disease that is transmitted usually by insects. So you might want to, if you have other fruit trees, check them
okay,
for that.
I have dwarf or crab apples.
Okay.
Yeah, and nobody seems bothered yet.
Good.
Okay.
And Canadian red chokecherry does not seem bothered either.
Okay.
Good.
That's all good. Okay. You might want to check, though, on Brian's website, the PDDC website.
Okay.
They do have a fire blight fact sheets, just so you know kind of what to look for.
Thank you very, very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Tom in Wanakee next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Say, late last year, in my grass and neighbors' lawns, a couple of neighbors' lawns, we started noticing a different grass. I don't know where it came from, but it's a lighter colored grass, a lighter green, rather bright green, a different type of leaf.
Kind of broader?
Leaf. Pardon?
Broad.
Broad, did you say?
The leaf is
the
leaf.
Yeah, is the leaf more broad?
Yes.
Okay, and kind of low growing?
Yes.
Okay, that's probably crabgrass.
A different type of crabgrass?
There are two species that we often have here. The one that you usually see in lawns usually is a little bit lower. It often is a lighter green with a broader blade on it than you would see on Kentucky bluegrass or fescue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, crabgrass is an annual species, so it reproduces from seed. And, you know, our other desirable turf grasses like fescue and bluegrass are perennials, so they're going to come back from their roots, but the crabgrass has to come back from seed. So if you can kill off the seed, you don't have the problem. So what I would advise you to do is use a pre-emergent crabgrass product to take care of that. Now, the key to it is that you have to get it on. It's called pre-emergent because it means it has to be on before the seed germinates. So usually what I tell people to look for is the forsythia bushes that are bright yellow. When you see those blooming, that's the time to put down your crabgrass control.
Now, these are large patches.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh,
okay.
That's very common.
Unfortunately, I was going to, a couple weeks ago, I was going to take a picture because we had such nice warm weather, and it was showing up even now, but then we got the snow.
Yeah.
But I'll take a check as soon as it melts, and I'm not quite sure about if it's broader, but yeah, I think so. And then we'll find out. But
yeah.
Thank you.
And the nice thing about the pre-emergent, then it doesn't come up, and that gives your grass, your lawn grass, a chance to get back in there and fight it out.
Right. And what you can do later on in the season is you can reseed over those areas. You can't do it right away.
No.
But you can. And the thing is, it doesn't actually kill the seed. It provides kind of a barrier. So if you disturb that, you may get crabgrass coming up again. So what you might want to do is put a little, maybe a half inch of compost on top of that area after you notice that the grass is not coming up there, and then reseed into that rather than working up the soil, because you don't want to disturb that barrier.
That's
so
good.
This
point.
Could have come about even though the neighbors have their lawns treated by a service, you know. So
really,
yeah, and it came up in their place too, and they've been having a lawn service for a number of years. I don't. And it's there too.
That is really interesting. They should probably talk to their lawn care company about that.
I'll double check and make sure as far as this, if it's the crabgrass or not. But
you can send me a picture.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. Send a picture to where?
You can send it to me at the Dane County Extension Office, or you can send it to the Turf Grass Lab. That probably would be even better. If you look up UW Turf Grass Lab, you can send it to their lab and ask, or you can send it to me at johnson.lisa@countyofdane.com.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We finally have some open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Terry in Elk Mound up next. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Last year, I tried to grow some yellowfin potatoes using the barrel method. I built a box instead of a barrel, and then I used some potting soil and mixed in some sawdust to set my potatoes in. For lack of a better word, I watered them with some crick sucker infused water.
Well, some what
as
water?
Time went on, I used some fish in the water, and broke it down.
Yep. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and then as the plants grew, then I just put more 2x6s up the sides of the box and then put more potting soil in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the plants grew enormous and beautiful. Mm-hmm. They never flowered. And
that's
when
good.
It got up to be about 3 feet high, then they started, you know, it was getting later in the year and they started getting brown, and so I stopped. So then when they all died off, I opened that box up. I ended up with 7 potatoes about the size of your thumbnail.
That's...
And I wondered, what the heck did I do wrong?
It sounds like there was... I don't know how there could have been too much nitrogen, because it doesn't sound like you were adding excessive amounts, and there was sawdust in the soil, which often will... if there's a high carbon source,
tie up
source,
the nitrogen.
Yeah, it will tie it up. So
yeah, and I just used regular potting soil from the big box store.
Huh. That is it. Now, how did you start your potatoes? Did you start them from potato sets, or tubers?
Yes, I got them from the seed company, and then I just cut them and put them in the ground. And like I said, the plants grew beautiful.
When you cut them, did you put them into the ground while the cuts were still fresh, or did you allow them to kind of seal over a little bit?
I waited 2 days
after
I cut them, and then I set the cut side down.
Hmm.
Boy.
And each potato, it had an eye in it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The only thing, I mean, it sounds like it's getting too much nitrogen.
Yeah, because when the vines go nuts like that, then... That's what it sounds like, but I don't know how that could have happened when you're just using an organic source. That's just really odd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I bought the yellowfin because they said when you cover them up, they send out shoots that are good for growing potatoes in barrels, but it didn't work.
It sounds like it didn't work. Wow. The only other thing I can think of is that maybe the potato pieces were too small. How big were they? About an inch by an inch, or?
Oh, no, they were bigger than that.
They were bigger.
Yeah.
Okay, I have no clue.
Yeah, I have no clue either. I mean, it just sounds like too much nitrogen, but given your procedure,
it sounds right.
It sounds right.
Well,
you stumped us.
Maybe try it again.
Yeah, you stumped us. So
I try a different soil, or try a different product to plant them in. Yeah,
or a different variety, something.
Or a different variety, yeah. It's a tough one.
It's a puzzlement.
Mark in Eau Claire, let's go to you. Hi, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
At my farmhouse in Jackson County, we have an invasive species in the form of garlic mustard.
Oh, that's awful.
The story of a lot of the kind of the oak woods around our farm.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
I'm wondering, A, if there's a treatment that's reasonable, and B, what is the downside to doing nothing?
Okay, let me answer the second question first. The downside to doing nothing is that it will continue to spread. This is a big problem. It tends to just totally smother any wildflowers that you might have. It even can... kind of make it so that it's really hard for woody plants like oaks, you know, from acorns or shrubs, anything like that, to be able to germinate. So it is a really big problem, and we do see it all over the state. Usually we do recommend treating it with something like an herbicide, unless you've got a small area. Because it, and the thing is that the seed bank builds up so quickly and it stays around for 5 to 7 years. So it's going to seem like you're not making any progress. But usually what is recommended by the DNR is glyphosate or Roundup. And it does kill it. I've used it many times before. But again, that seed bank, it's going to keep coming up for a while. And they do recommend that you stop treating it as soon as the plants stop flowering, because you don't want to treat it when the seeds are developing, because you might spread the seeds around.
No, there we
go.
Yeah,
it's a tough one. And yeah, there are restoration companies that will help you treat it. You can also treat it with fire, but that's a much more involved procedure that we don't have time to probably go into here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a fairly large tract of woods, and I was thinking, I mean, it seems like it's impossible to rub it out. I mean, I think it's at the neighbors and all over the place.
Yeah.
I was thinking of just trying to aggressively treat 10 or 15 acre blocks at a time.
Yes, that's fine. Yeah. And treat, if you have to, from the outside in to, you know, kind of draw a line in the sand.
Yeah, there we go. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa's UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking gardening. This is Garden Talk you're listening to. And our guest, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. She and I and Brian Huddleston tomorrow morning at 9:30. If you get there, you know, a lot of people say, geez, that's kind of early, but no, it's not that early. I have to be there. Lisa has to be there. but we'll talk all things in the garden. We've got some nice books, garden-related books to give away, and we've got some slides showing. What you've got the jumping worm slide.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I may have also given him a brown marmorated stink bug slide. That was from my yard, too. It's like invasive species central.
Oh, so if you want to see those and maybe some of the new varieties. And, of course, he's got some of the diseases
well. Oh, yeah. Got to have those.
So we'll be doing that from 9:30 to almost 10:30. I think it's 50 minutes we get, sort of like a class period.
It'll be fun.
It'll be a lot of fun. At the Dane County Expo Center. And it runs Saturday and Sunday. Well, actually,
Friday
tonight.
Night, yeah, tonight till 8.
And then Saturday, 9 in the morning until...
Is it 6 or is it 9, 5?
Yeah, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
And then Sunday...
I think it's 10 to 4? 10 to 5.
10 to 5 on Sunday. And you're talking both those Saturday
I've got a talk on tomatoes and another one on growing raspberries. And one is on Saturday, one is on Sunday. And I can't remember which is which.
Well,
but I'll know by tomorrow.
Let's talk about geraniums for a minute. Liz in Wauwatosa has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Liz.
Hi there, Larry and Lisa. It's getting to be that time of the year when the geraniums are starting to, that I've been wintering downstairs under a grow light, are starting to look a little bit leggy and not healthy. What's step number one to have nice, beautiful red geraniums this spring and summer?
Okay, well, you overwintered them in pots, I take it?
I overwintered them in pots.
Yep.
They were really blooming last October when I brought them in.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer blooming.
Sure.
So one pot is just still gorgeous. It doesn't look leggy at all. It looks really healthy. But I know that there's a process. Last year I didn't apparently do what I should have done, and I didn't have any bright red, beautiful geraniums until like the middle of July. Mm.
Okay. Well, one thing you should start to do is you should start to pinch those geraniums back.
Okay.
How far back do you
know? that's the thing. How tall are these?
Well, some of them, the leggier ones, are probably like 6 inches.
Okay. So what you could probably do is you maybe pinch them back a little less than halfway.
2 inches or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, yeah, 2 or 3 inches. And then that will cause them to bush out. You may want to put on a little light fertilizer. I wouldn't put on anything really heavy, and I would wait to do it until probably April or so.
Okay.
But yeah, if you, they don't like to be real wet.
Okay, that was another question I
had. They don't like to be too wet, and pinching them back, that's something in the greenhouse that I work at that we typically do in the spring, is to keep them from getting leggy.
Yeah.
Pinch them back and then start fertilizing right once the, yeah, you can pinch back right now. And then when the, when April comes around, you can start fertilizing.
That sounds good.
All right.
And I'm sure this is probably true of most plants that are wintered.
Yeah, they need pinching.
They need pinching and they need fertilizer, but not until like April.
Yeah.
Or so.
Yeah. You could even do it in late March. That would be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
I have one comment. I have a beautiful hibiscus that we've had probably for 10 or 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and it has its seasons mixed up.
Oh, it's blooming now?
Yes. Yes. It is.
Oh, boy. Well, that's kind of a nice, pleasant winter surprise.
It's a wonderful way to greet the morning.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Liz. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, it's nice to have something like that
mm-hmm.
this time of the year. Well, that's what you're going to find at Garden Expo, too. If you go, you're going to see some flowers, and it's going to smell great, and it's going to be warm.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't
wait.
All
kinds of green.
Can't wait. I'll be there bright and early tomorrow morning. Donna in Door County, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling about, I have 2 asparagus beds. One is in a raised bed and the other is in a garden. And I spend more time pulling weeds out of both, you know, whether it's raised or in the ground, it doesn't seem to matter. And after watching the asparagus that comes up in along the country roads every spring, people are out in the ditches, you know.
Yeah.
Is it really necessary to work on those weeds so hard as I do?
Well, weeds do compete with our desirable plants. They also sometimes can kind of act as a reservoir for diseases or insects. So depending on what kind of weeds you're tending to get, are they more grassy weeds or more broadleaf weeds?
No, they're grassy weeds.
Okay.
That's
kind of common, unfortunately. It's probably quack grass or something like that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
That does tend to be a problem in perennial crops like asparagus. Have you ever tried a grass killer on them?
No, I don't do that.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No. I guess I was going to ask you if the one bed that's in the ground, not in the raised bed, is to try a summer of just mowing around it and let the weeds grow in the asparagus. Will they be affected a great deal? Will they be smaller? Or?
Yeah. Probably. And the other thing is that it gives the weeds more of a foothold. The rule with weeds is that you don't want to let them go to seed, if at all possible. But something like quackgrass that spreads by underground rhizomes, the more you can pull it, the better. Trying to get those roots out. And I recognize that it's tough. I had to dig up an area of perennials this last year because I couldn't control the quackgrass.
It's almost impossible to get the roots all out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is
really hard.
Well, I guess I'll just keep pulling
weeds.
Keep
fighting
then,
a holding
right?
action.
Yeah,
there you
right.
go, Donna.
Yeah. I have another comment I want to make about the carrots, the person who called in about planting carrots. One day when I was out in my raised bed, I was pulling out, thinning the carrots and throwing them away, and there was someone working on my garage roof, and he was watching me, and he said, you know, you can replant those. They're just a root. And I thought, oh, I wonder. So I planted 8 of them that year.
Oh, okay. So you were pulling them up rather than snipping them. Okay.
Right. Pulling them up and had 8 extra gorgeous carrots.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I've been doing it ever since. Wherever there's a bare spot when I'm thinning them out, I'll stick that little carrot in somewhere else. And
yeah.
It works well.
Not a bad idea. How do you, what do you do? Stick a pencil in the ground and make a hole? And
yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. A pencil or some sort of a.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just make a hole in there and stick them in. It works good.
Good piece of advice, Donna. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. Let's go to Jim in Rhinelander next. Hi, Jim.
Hello. How are you, folks?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
What can we do for you?
Well, my wife received a present from our son and his family out in Vancouver, Washington, and we don't quite know what to do with it. It's an aerated
kind,
yarn
right?
bag made of black felt.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, you know what they are.
Oh, yeah.
How would we use it?
Well, you use it just like you would a pot. You fill it with soil. You can grow peppers in it. You can grow, depending on the size, you could probably grow tomatoes in it. How big is it? Like a grocery bag size? Or?
But a large grocery bag.
A large grocery bag.
Flat bottom on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. You fill those up with soil. And you get a potting soil mix is usually the best.
Yeah.
And then probably that size you could probably plant a couple of pepper plants in. Or you could plant one tomato plant in it. The problem, of course, with that type of, if you've got an indeterminate tomato that tends to get really tall, you need to stake it. And
yeah, so and, it gets to be a pain.
Yeah.
Well, I grew some of those in our living room one year.
You did? Wow.
10-foot long branches.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
You're very intrepid.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, so there you go. And then they just sit, you just,
yeah,
the
you
bag just
treat
just
them
sits
like
there.
A pot. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, now, do you put something underneath them? Will it will water drain down and begin to get...
Yeah, usually they're used outside.
Oh, outside.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're used outside. I'm sorry, I should have said that. Yeah, usually they're used for growing vegetables outside. Although you could grow, you know, you could grow annuals.
But they'll leak
too.
Water through.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. That's part of the reason that they're designed that way is to make sure that they have good drainage.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah, so don't put it on the deck or something like that.
No.
At least not without a saucer.
Yeah.
There you go, Jim.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Sure appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And that's the first time we've ever talked about that.
Yeah, grow bags are getting more popular. There are some even that are designed for growing potatoes that have got like a little Velcro opening at the bottom where you're supposed to be able to harvest the tomatoes. I don't know how well that works.
Or the potatoes.
Yeah, I don't know how well that works. But, it's just kind of a new trendy thing.
Sort of like the upside-down tomato?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's more lightweight if you need to move it around. It's easier to move, so.
Kyle in Dunn has a question. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Lisa, was it?
Yes.
Yep.
Hi, yeah. I just got to say, Larry, first, that this is one of the highlights of my week. I drive a lot for work, and I cannot wait for Friday between 11 and 12:30.
Oh, thank you.
It's just great about this program. But I got a couple questions. My wife and I are looking at starting a little bee colony. We're going to do a couple hives. We got bee classes this Saturday. And we have a little plot of, it's kind of weeds. It's kind of been neglected. There was actually some parsnip back there that I was kind of spraying. And
ooh,
and stuff.
Yeah, that's
but,
nasty.
yeah, not good stuff.
No.
What is the best way to kind of start like a larger kind of wildflower area? Because, I don't know, bees probably like that.
Yeah, bees like areas like that for forage. It's sometimes they call that a refugia if they put kind of a border around a field for bees. Often they will usually wildflower seed is what you would probably the most economical way to do it, depending on how big it is. You might want to throw some herb seeds in there too. Would be my recommendation because bees really, really love that, like some catmint seeds or not catnip, but although catnip certainly will attract them, but it also will go all over the place. But catmint is a good one. Parsley, like we were talking about earlier, a number of those different herb seeds. But there are wildflower seed mixes, I'd recommend going to a place like we talked about, Westfield Nursery. They have online ordering available. Apparently, okay. they don't have a physical store anymore, but you can order online. AgriCall is another Wisconsin company. There are a bunch of different places you can buy seeds from. And
so, like, kind of a grow and grow kind of thing? Or, I mean, do you think I should, like, disc it, till it up, all that kind of stuff?
Well, what's it in right now? Is it in grass or?
It's in
weeds.
It's probably, like, I don't know, like 60 by 100.
Okay.
I mean, we're looking at, you know, doing a pretty, I don't know, fairly large spot for a backyard kind of thing.
Okay. Is it in turf grass right now, or what's growing there right
Honestly,
now?
Honestly, it's just kind of a neglected little area. I kind of been pulling out some honeysuckle that was
That's right. You said parsnip. Okay. What I would probably do, and I know some people don't like to use chemicals. I don't like to recommend it, but it's probably the most efficient thing to do here is to treat the plants with, well, first of all, wait until they grow up, mow them down, treat it with Roundup, wait until they die. Then you can disc it up a little bit, and then you'll get another round of weeds. Kill those off. You can do it with black plastic. It's just that it takes a lot longer. But if you wanted to be organic, well, it's not strictly organic because it's plastic. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't want to use a chemical, you could try that. The problem is it usually doesn't kill off the perennial weeds like quackgrass, whereas something like Roundup would. So usually you have to go through a couple of rounds of killing off weeds. And then, you know, after you've disced it up a second time, you can usually put in the seeds. Now, your first couple of years, you're going to have a lot of weeds. So you're going to need to be diligent about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, all right.
So one last little thing. Just, I have a, I was at a giant pumpkin growing contest last year. And
did you win?
I did.
Did you? Wow.
I have a couple friends that, you know, I mean, our pumpkins weren't, you know, they're not going to win the county fair or anything like that. But they're pretty big. And so everybody wants to use our seeds for this pumpkin contest this year. And I accidentally or neglected the pumpkins, and the seeds froze, and I just kind of was like, well, if they're frozen now, I might as well just stick them in the freezer. Are they going to be usable or not?
Probably not.
No.
Pumpkins are not hardy here, and usually if the seed freezes, it's not viable. I mean, you could certainly test it, but my guess is probably not. The other thing is that pumpkins don't come true from seed unless you're very diligent. Any of those cucurbits need at least 12 visits by a bee in order to get properly pollinated. So you can get crosses. So what I'm getting at is even if the seeds are viable, they may not grow the same kind of pumpkin. They may grow something that's kind of outer space looking, that doesn't look like a pumpkin.
I know you can buy seeds online that are from Giant.
Yeah.
And I think
they
Scott,
have to control that very carefully.
They control that very carefully. And you pay
yes.
a pretty good premium for those. I remember Scott Craven was blanched a little bit when he saw how much he was going to have to pay for 10 seeds. But you can do it.
Yeah.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck with that, Kyle.
You remember when Jim Nienhuis used to have those pumpkin regattas here?
Yes. Those were a lot of fun. I was there one of the years I was there, the pier collapsed part of it.
Oh, well, that would be exciting.
Dumped a bunch of people in the water.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
Dear.
There we go, Kyle. Thanks again. And Amber in Superior will turn to you. Hi, Amber.
Hi, I have a question. I believe I have some velvet leaf.
Mm-hmm. It's got a big, big heart-shaped leaf that's kind of velvety.
Yeah. Fuzzy.
Yeah. It's up in the gardens around my house. I have a bunch of hostas over there, and I have no idea how to get rid of it.
Well, it does pull easily, that's the good news. It is an annual, not a perennial. That's the other bit of good news. The bad news, of course, is that it does produce copious amounts of seed. So the real thing about it is making sure that you don't let it go to seed. But you can hand pull a lot of it. If it's thick in an area that you wanted to put down black plastic, you could probably kill off a lot of it that way, but it might not kill the seeds. So my guess is that you're probably going to be fighting it for a few years.
Okay.
You certainly could use something like Roundup. That's, you know, perfectly okay to do, but if it's around something that you're eating, maybe pulling it would be the best way to go.
I'd pull it. It pulls easy.
Yeah, it does pull easy. It's got almost a tap root. So.
Okay, so could I put the Roundup on the hostas with that?
No. Roundup is a contact herbicide, so it's going to kill anything that it touches. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Roger in Little Chute, your turn now. Hi, Roger.
Hi. If I have a small hoop house, which I have some peat there, what would be your suggestions for, let's say, trying to grow, let's say, early tomatoes and peppers?
Well, you probably would need some supplemental lighting if you're trying to. How early are we talking here?
Well, June.
Okay. I thought you were trying to grow tomatoes in March. And
no, May, early May, if you got a hoop house.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. You just need to make sure.
Ready.
Oh, okay. All right. Usually, let's see, where are you located? Oh, you're in Little Chute. Okay.
Right.
That's how far north of here is that?
Near Appleton.
Near Appleton.
Okay. Yeah, usually here in the Madison area, we don't start tomatoes until like middle of March at the earliest, but it may need to start earlier for you. The thing I would recommend is not letting the temperatures get below 55. So if you've got some kind of supplemental heat, that's what you need. Tomatoes really prefer warm soil temperatures and warm air temperatures. They really get stunted easily if they don't have enough heat.
But hoop houses, I got a friend with one, and you can see these gigantic plants with tons of tomatoes.
Yeah, once they've germinated and got, you know, started, you can fudge a little bit on that, but they don't like to get much below 55.
There we go.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And Bill, have you got a quick comment? Oh no. Oh no, we lost him. I think he's probably on his cell phone and he's now out of service there. Well, I tell you what. Let's talk about Garden Expo here in the last 30 seconds or so that we've got. Garden Expo is running, starts this afternoon, goes till 8 o'clock tonight.
Yep, starts at 2 today, so 2 a little o'clock. Earlier than
normal.
Yep.
And then tomorrow, starting at 9 in the morning, Lisa and I and Brian Huddleston will be on at 9:30 at, you'll find out once you get there. I don't even know where we are. And we'll be talking from 9:30 to 10:30 roughly. And there are so many great things to see there. You've got every kind of wonderful flowers, and I always buy some a vinaigrette dressing there.
I like to get honey. And
get the honey there and any kind of garden thing imaginable.
Yeah. And so, all of our public gardens are there. You've got Old Brick there. You got
and
Rotary.
Tons of educational presentations.
Lots of education sessions.
So that's at the Dane County Expo Center this weekend. Don't you dare miss it. and thank you so much for calling. I hope to see you tomorrow morning at Garden Expo. In the meantime, stay with us.